The following is part two of a two-part conversation between myself and Dale Tutt, an experienced aerospace and defense professional for over 30 years. It's a pleasure to hear from Dale's firsthand experience as we discuss the symbiotic relationship of digital transformation and artificial intelligence. And now, dear friends, is Dale Tutt.
Well, we've talked a lot about engineering aspects of AI, and I think another aspect that a lot of people tend to maybe not think about sometimes is the manufacturing aspects. And how does this change and transform your manufacturing capabilities? And I think about some of these process intensive, industries that I've worked in or that I've seen, that I've seen some of our customers that are working in, and all of them are now looking at how do they reduce energy emissions and carbon output, and so certainly as you can now start to take, use your digital twin to design your production lines. But then taking the real data off of those production lines and figuring out how you can further optimize that and using AI and machine learning to make that more efficient, more effective. Some of the other things that we hear a lot of our customers talking about is understanding the battery aging process. So there's a lot of demand for batteries because of all the demand for electric cars. And a lot of our customers tell us, hey, one of the things that we struggle, that we're challenged with is the what's called the battery aging process. And this is usually a process that might take 3 or 4 weeks or longer as you're developing a new batch of material for your batteries. And so if they can use, it's very process intensive, and you can use AI to start to optimize that process and bring down that production time. If you can bring that aging process down, you may not be able to bring it down, today's, but maybe the results of that, of your processing in 3 or 4 days. And so you don't have to wait 3 or 4 weeks to find out that you had a bad batch. And so I think this is one of those areas where AI can really help customers and the data analytics to really help customers produce batteries faster and get to good batches and good quality batches faster, especially to help address the demand for new batteries. Another area that is, that I have some experience with is when you're going through composites manufacturing, carbon fiber composites materials are used for airplanes, for windmill blades, even in automotive manufacturers are using these materials now. They're very process intensive, and you have to control a lot of parameters around, the humidity, what's the temperature, what's the temperature of the oven, what's the temperature of the part. And a lot of times there's a bit of black art to this. It's you have to be very creative that you have these parts, and, especially in like an aircraft, it might be, very thick in one part and it might be very thin in another part. And yet the whole part has to go into the oven at the same time, and it all heats up at different rates. And so it's sometimes there's, a lot of learning that you go through as you build the first couple of parts, and you end up, maybe have scrapping. So I think now as you start to look at, the properties and, the process of how those parts are cured, that if you can start to use AI to help optimize those processes, there's the opportunity for companies to really, increase their yield and the quality of the parts that are coming out, and maybe even the strength of the parts. So that's just kind of an example of a very process intensive, industry that you have to think about. You have opportunities for how AI can help solve those problems.
A ton. And they're really interrelated to the longstanding objectives by the group, even before you talk about AI. I mean, to demystify a bit and nerd out some, you're describing this complicated problem with all these parameters. In a straightforward way, you're suffering from the curse of dimensionality, right? There's too many things going on. I don't have enough data to model the relationships. Okay, the relationships of things like humidity and then maybe material strength that comes out on the other end if you're processing materials. Well, it's a very nonlinear problem as well as a very high dimensional problem. And yeah, of course, that's the tool you pull out of your tool belt is machine learning. We know it's very good at capturing these nonlinear relationships. And that's a message that I think is overlooked sometimes when we talk about AI in our industry, is look, we have the same sort of mission. It's just a different tool that can handle these sorts of problems with, you know, cursive dimensionality and a lot of nonlinearity. And another layer here, I love the manufacturing example. I think that's a good one as a little case study on how much this industry and all like this space is transforming, you know, this digitalization effort. I mean, you can really be granular about it and say, well, you know, we should apply these machine learning class of methods to help people when they produce materials so they can understand things in the full life cycle of whatever they're creating. So like in a concrete way of saying it, let's say I'm producing steel. And I want to know things like, well, what if I do this type of annealing process to form the steel versus another? Well, it would be great to know the impact, not just in the moment when you're manufacturing things, but, you know, with this data-driven techniques, 20 years later, when the consumer purchases the materials and builds whatever they're building, you know, how does the life of the product behave based on these decisions you make very early on in the process? And so I think it's no surprise we're seeing these data-driven methods. Like you said, data analytics, these things that cover from design to manufacturing to operation, and wanting these tools to have, you know, coverage over all of these aspects. Obviously, in that, that's really looking like big data, right?
Yep.
But, you know, in the end, it's an age-old struggle. We kind of have the same sort of fight and sort of transition of new technologies into society. AI is probably a current flavor that's related, easy to relate to. But I'm guessing you have some other stuff in your experience where some emerging technology came and there was sort of this process to have society adapt to it, trust it, use it. Anything come to mind?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, some of these technologies that I've looked at over the years. I'm trying to think how many years ago we started looking at, like, you know, augmented reality and out in the shop floor. And at the time we were like, you know, we looked at it, but it just wasn't, you know, it was hard to implement. It was, you know, the technology was challenging and at the time and our processes didn't support a lot of, you know, doing it a little different way. And so, you know, now you're starting to see a change. You know, what wasn't possible 7-8 years ago, you know, now is starting to become more mainstream. And so we've seen a lot of this tech, you know, we've seen this technology pop up once in a while and it shows a lot of promise, but then I think the reality kind of hits everyone like, okay, well, it's a little harder to implement than we thought. And so that's where, you know, I loved the example that you used at the beginning, or, you know, like about every decade something pops up. But I think this is where we're starting to see it's going to really, you know, take, you know, get traction and take hold. And I think we're going to see it just, you know, I think the best applications of AI is people may not even realize that it's in there. It's just, you know, it's changing how they're working and they're becoming more efficient and it's making the tools more usable. And they're just like, wow, I just love this, you know? And so that's just, I think that's when you're going to see AI being really, really successful.
Yeah. I'd say there's a generational paradigm shift on what software should look like, you know, because in my generation versus my daughter's generation, I mean, there's just going to be a different expectation on how intuitive, easy to use, plug and play sort of the software is. So I think, you know, we're seeing a lot of that with these AI apps that are percolating everywhere, where you can just do crazy things and that sort of thing. But, you know, the concerns for trustworthiness and things like that for AI are valid. The points they are usually bring up are, you know, well, if they become more explainable and more trustworthy, you know, our researchers can continue to shed some of insight on why the machine learning models may give a certain suggestion versus another, do things to reduce bias and make sure things are fair and there's you know, no harmful stereotypes perpetuated in the design or in the model predictions. But I think this interest, it's been an interesting case study as well in 2023 for ChatGPT, right? I mean, I think it's amazing how much everyone has pretty much educated themselves on how to use it, what's a good response, what's a bad response. And I think that user education is going to be another key role here in terms of safely leveraging AI in our applications. So Dale, can you think of another example in your time of a technology like AI, but not AI from past, where It was emerging. It was this type of trending topic that got all the attention. Obviously, there were skeptics, but that process of it going from just a highly popular topic that was emerging to something trusted and in the tool belt of like a engineer, mechanical engineer, aerospace engineer.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, I go back to simulation and how it's being used now to really define products and use being used now today to really help drive decision making as companies are developing new airplane products or new cars. It doesn't matter what we're talking about. But in the early days, you know, 20 some years ago, a little over 20 years ago, when we were developing a lot of simulations, we were kind of going through a process where we wanted to use desktop simulations, you know, CFD analysis coupled with flight control simulations aerodynamic analysis coupled with flight control simulations. And we were developing systems doing that. And then we'd take them to an Iron Bird and we'd test them on the Iron Bird. And then we'd eventually, when we get to the airplane, we'd start flying. The previous process had been, well, you know, you'd do some modeling and then you'd start flying the airplane and you'd figure out and you'd go through fly, fix, fly approach. So we were trying to go through a process of simulation into the hardware in the loop simulation, then into the flight test. And as we were doing all of this work, we started to, you know, we were working on a new airplane program and we found an issue with the airplane that it was not going to meet the requirements and for the roll control system. And so the pilot forces were going to be too high in certain flight conditions. And so I just kind of remember at the time our bosses said, well, you know, this is all new. Do you trust it enough for me to, like, you know, change the direction of the program right now? And we're kind of like, oh, everyone's kind of wringing our hands and we didn't know. But we at least as a company went on a parallel path. So we did invest in creating a parallel path. And as it turned out, when we got into flight test, the simulation, the hardware and loop simulation was exactly right. And so we had a plan in place. We'd at least been able to use our simulation to do that risk mitigation. Now, fast forward 3 or 4 more years later, we're working on another new airplane program. And when our team found an issue on the airplane, everybody said, okay, we're going to go fix it. Because we had gone through the process of validating the simulation and demonstrating that it was giving us the results that we expected, that we weren't doing, you know, that we weren't, you know, just putting a lot of fudge factors in the simulation to make it work, that we could actually rely on that to make predictions about how the airplane was going to fly. So I think that, you know, it's as any time you have a new technology coming on board like this, people are going to question, like, well, am I getting the right answer? You know, there are some examples when people have gone out to ChatGPT and they've asked a question and they kind of get something that is not the answer they expected. And it may have been that they asked the question wrong. It doesn't matter. They didn't get the answer that they expected. And so then that calls it into question. So that's where I think, you know, using some examples from the past, we've gone through this before with new technology on how we have to learn to validate it, learn to trust it so that you're making, you know, critical decisions with it. And I think that's what we're, you know, that's going to be the path that we're on to help address some of these questions of trustworthiness.
Mm. You know, that was a great response, but I'm not going to lie. When you said fly, fix, fly, I felt jarred and thought people used to do things that in that way. Wow. But, you know, I was going to ask what's some advice you would give to AI enthusiasts and practitioners to sort of learn at a high level abstraction of, okay, when you went through that process with simulation as a new technology, what was sort of a key thing to do? But I think you pretty much answered it right in the end there. Validate the methods along the way. And that's something I definitely preach in my time working in different projects and teams for AI and simulation work, is that, you know, we should form the problem in a way that's familiar, you know, i.e. based off of physics principles, conservation laws, simulation practice and methodologies, and then use it for in sort of like with bumper rails to sort of, you know, give directional help, but not use it in a blind black box way. And I think that I can say a lot of people in our industry are trying to make the box semi-transparent rather than black box. So I would definitely agree that that's some expertise there to glean from simulation. I won't ask how long ago that was, because I think that's mean to the podcast guests to do that with AI. So great answer. Thanks.
Thanks. Well, thank you.
Okay. Well, again, thanks for the chat. It was great to have you on the podcast. We can close the episode here, but I'll give you the chance to say some parting words or an outro if you like, Dale.
Yeah, well, thanks, Justin. I'm, you know, as we started the show, we talked about the power of digital transformation, how it's companies helping companies with their business transformation, whether they're trying to go faster or just trying to address some of their workforce concerns or new sustainability requirements. And so I am excited about the power of AI and how, as it starts to embed in a lot of the solutions that we can provide, how it's going to really accelerate the digital transformation for a lot of our customers and really help them achieve their business goals, their business objectives so much more faster than they have in the past. So I think we have exciting times ahead. It's a exciting new technology, and I think it's going to really change how people work, which I think is at the end of the day is one of the things that we really want to help people with. So let's help them out with that. So thank you for having me.
Well said. Totally agree. Thanks again, Dale. And with that, we'll close the episode. Thanks for listening.
Thanks a lot.